swayed by the left.
Okay. Can I ask you one other question about immigration? It seems like it's a major topic tonight. Is it a big one for you?
Well, yeah. I'm all for people coming into this country and supporting this country, speaking English, assimilating. What we have, and I'm from a border state, we have open borders. We have illegal immigrants coming in here, killing, raping, and maiming our children. Okay? That is not acceptable.
But you're saying that's not all of them.
The border wall needs to be finished. Joe Biden, had he just left that alone, we would have had a complete border wall. The blood is on Joe Biden's hands and his administration.
Just real quick, there are some people who have drawn attention to reports that show that U.S. born citizens are much more likely to commit crimes than immigrants.
That's a lie. That's an out-and-out lie. I don't know where you're getting your information from, but it's a lie.
One, I got it from a study that was done by Northwestern who used census data.
No. Nope. Nope, not buying it.
And one other.
I was a police officer for 21 years. I will tell you, illegal immigrants commit more crimes than anyone else. Because, first of all, they're coming into this country, they're committing a crime by coming into this country. So they don't care about our laws. They don't abide by our laws.
In fact, it's been widely reported that Thomas Matthew Crooks was, in fact, a registered Republican who would have been eligible to cast his first presidential vote in November for the election. Public records also show Crooks' father is a registered Republican, his mother a registered Democrat, and that as a 17-year-old, Crooks made a $15 donation to a Democratic Party cause. Gene Guerrero, you've been shaking your head through this comment. Stacey Goodman is a retired police officer.
Yeah, she mentioned blood on Biden's hands. If you want to talk about somebody who has blood on their hands, the Republican Party has spent the last 7 years normalizing the white supremacist great replacement theory, which has been used by white terrorists, by white extremists across the world and in this country to commit horrific acts of violence against Mexican Americans, against Latinos, against Black people. And it's one of the most dangerous theories that exists today, and it has been normalized in U.S. politics. It's the idea that that immigrants are being brought to the United States to replace white people. It confuses demographic change and demographic growth with demographic subtraction and demographic violence. It's extremely deceptive and manipulative, and the Republican Party has been doing this for 7 years. And so it's, of course, no surprise that we, under the Trump administration, we saw the worst, the most deadly attack against the Mexican-American community that the United States has seen in El Paso when you saw the white supremacist shooter attack a Walmart because of this theory. So the notion that Trump is the victim, that he is being victimized, or that Americans are being victimized by the Democratic Party's border policies, completely ignores the reality, which is that President Biden has deployed historic numbers of agents to the border. They're seeing record seizures of fentanyl. He has kept in place a majority of Trump's restrictive policies at the border. And again, the research consistently shows that immigrants are far less likely to commit crimes. And this includes undocumented immigrants. Undocumented immigrants are far
Gene
less
Guerrero.
Likely to commit crimes.
Before we go, I want to ask you about your latest piece in the New York Times, How Biden Can Win Over Young Latinos. You say that 20% of the Latino population that will be voting for the first time. What is the significance of this?
So the focus has been on the MAGA Latino. Every time you talk about the Latino vote in the national media, you hear about the MAGA Latino, the Latino who is supporting Trump. And while this is a reality of a segment of the Latino voters, those who are going to determine the future of the Latino vote are young, progressive voters who are overrepresented, actually, in battleground states. So if President Biden focuses on turning out this young Latino electorate, it can make all the difference. And these are Latinos who are very, very progressive. They believe in a pathway to citizenship for long-term undocumented immigrants. They believe in abortion rights. They believe in stopping climate change. They believe in stopping gun violence. They're more likely to belong to groups that have been harmed by Trump. They're more likely to identify as LGBTQ. They're more likely to have a family member or a close friend who is undocumented. So if President Biden wants to win over young Latinos, he needs to take the group of people that Trump has chosen to persecute systematically and show that he has what it takes to defend them. He has already taken significant actions as far as executive action to provide deportation relief to the undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens. However, he needs to go farther than that. He needs to take much bolder action to show that he is, in fact, a fighter for oppressed communities. Right now, there is an impression among young voters, including Latino voters, that he is as bad with oppressed communities as Trump because of the horrors in Gaza. And there is one way, there's just one way that President Biden can counter that narrative, and it is to take these people that Trump is victimizing, that the Republican Party is victimizing, and show that he has what it takes to defend them and take bold action to provide deportation relief to all undocumented people who have lived here a long time, who have U.S. citizen children here, who were essential workers during the pandemic, and make sure that they can be safe here, they can continue paying taxes, and they can continue to save this economy from a recession.
Jean Guidetto, we want to thank you for being with us, author of Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, and the White Nationalist Agenda. We'll link to your piece in the New York Times, How Biden Can Win Over Young Latinos. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. I'm Amy Goodman. As the Republican National Convention enters its third day, we look now at how Donald Trump is trying to increase his appeal with black voters. During the first presidential debate, Donald Trump slammed President Biden for allowing migrants into the country, claiming they're taking, quote, black jobs.
The fact is that his big kill on the black people is the millions of people that he's allowed to come in through the border. They're taking black jobs now, and it could be 18, it could be 19, and even 20 million people. They're taking black jobs, and they're taking Hispanic jobs, and you haven't seen it yet, but you're going to see something that's going to be the worst in our history.
We're joined right now by Howard University political science professor Clarence Lussain. His latest book is titled $20 and Change, Harriet Tubman and the Ongoing Fight for Racial Justice and Democracy, also author of The Black History of the White House. His piece in The Nation is headlined, Don't Believe Trump When He Claims He's Not Racist. Trump does not deserve a single black or Hispanic vote. Nada. None. Professor Lussain, thanks for joining us again on Democracy Now! Can you talk about the point that he is making? We just had a long discussion about immigration. President Trump pitting Latinos, immigrants against African Americans in this country and the significance of this.
So thank you for having me. So as your previous guest just pointed out, it's important to know that this idea of replacement theory, that whites are being threatened by these cultural invaders, is something that the Donald Trump wing of the party has been using ever since Donald Trump stepped onto the national stage. The article I wrote in The Nation was to point out that we don't have to memory hold what Donald Trump's history of racism has been, but more importantly, also who has supported Donald Trump. Ever since he stepped onto this stage, every avowed racist in the country, Ku Klux Klanners, neo-Nazis, avowed fascists, have backed Donald Trump. And he's been able to get away with that kind of support because in many ways the media has evaded questioning him about that. But this has become the way in which the Republican Party in 2024, a party of grievance, extremism, and racism, operates and function. And so it's really critical to not let this memory be lost of Donald Trump's policies and behavior over the last number of years and how that has permeated the Republican Party.
As you point out in a recent interview in Time magazine, Trump suggested the problem was really anti-white racism. If you look right now, there's absolutely a bias against white people, and that's a problem, Trump said. Your response, Professor Lussain?
So Trump, again, is leaning into his base. And what the data is showing is that for at least the last 10 years or so, if not even before then, that a majority of whites, and particularly Republican voters, believe that racism in this country exists against white people, that black people, that Latinos, that Asians basically do not have issues with institutional or systemic racism, but it's actually whites that are being targeted. And this isn't just kind of rhetoric. This is actually manifesting itself both in the Republican Party platform and Republican Party activists. Stephen Miller, for example, who your earlier guest referenced, heads up America First Legal. Its entire purpose is to go after what they argue are racism, racist attacks against whites. So America First Legal has filed lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit against private sector entities that they claim are discriminating, particularly against white males. And so when Donald Trump says that anti-white racism is actually a thing, he is very serious that his second administration, if he comes to power, will operate on that. He has pledged, for example, that he will end every DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion program that exists anywhere in the federal government. Now, that's not just talking about specific programs about diversity. That's talking about any effort in any branch of government to recognize that there needs to be inclusive hiring, that needs to be inclusive policies. So this is a very real tactic on the part of Donald Trump. The problem is that it actually conflicts with what they're trying to do and win black voters. Donald Trump recognizes that in the swing states, in Georgia, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, in all of these key battleground states, the black vote has been extremely decisive in helping the Democrats. So they have to figure out a way to either drive down the vote for the Democrats or, if possible, if they can win votes. But that's very difficult to do, given Donald Trump's record in history.
On Monday, Democracy Now!'s Renee Feltz was on the floor of the convention. She spoke to a man wearing a large cowboy hat who is attending the RNC with members of the Florida delegation.
Larry Wilcoxon from Florida.
And are you here as part of the delegation?
I'm just here.
All right. Can you say a little bit about why you're here?
I'm here to support the president, Donald J. Trump. That's the only reason why I'll come here.
It sounded like he might have even been talking to people like you, his supporters, when he spoke about preserving black jobs. Can you talk about, you know, what that might have meant to you? What's the difference between black jobs and other jobs, for example?
See, I think a lot of stuff be taken out of context. And what he mean was just mid-level jobs. I mean, and that's just the truth. Mid-level jobs, as far as like trades, those are mid-level jobs to me. And so that's what he meant. And yes, a lot of illegals that coming over here, a lot of migrants coming over here, and that's the jobs they're getting, because a lot of our own employees, employers, they hiring those individuals for cheaper wages. And that's just the truth.
Your response, Professor Clarence Lussain.
So when Donald Trump refers to the black people and he refers to black jobs, what he's saying is that his view of where black people fit in this country, in employment and culture and otherwise, is always at the bottom. Donald Trump never has anything positive to say about the black community. He never talks about black doctors, for example, or black engineers, or black accountants, or black people who are in many, many different professions up and down the spectrum of employment. He essentially sees through racist-tinted eyes black people at the very, very bottom. And that's how he sees immigrants, or to be more precise, immigrants of color. And so that's the conflict that he's trying to pitch. But what the data shows, of course, what the Department of Labor shows, is that at every single area of occupation, you have black people, you have Latinos, you have Asians, kind of across the spectrum. And so Donald Trump, though, feeds into this narrative among conservatives that there are categories of work for certain people, and that is how he then sees attacking immigrants and creating, again, this conflict between the black community and the immigrant community.
On Tuesday night, Democracy Now!'s Messiah Rhodes caught up with Forgetto Blow, a pro-Trump rapper who debuted his video Trump, Trump Baby, featuring Amber Rose at the RNC a day after she spoke. This is what he said to Messiah.
I've been supporting Trump like diehard since 2015. Before that, I was with Rick Ross, French Montana, a lot of big name rappers, had a lot of big name songs. So I was already very successful in that side of the industry, you know, grinding my way in. But Donald Trump was like the boss, you know what I mean? He's getting money. He's a rapper's dream, you know? He's out here now dodging bullets, getting indictments. He's a real rapper. But, you know, back in 2016, when he came in, it was just about proving people wrong. And that's one thing I'm big on. Nobody believed that he would be the president. He knocked that door down, right? He's very successful. He's made a lot of money. He's got the beautiful wife, nice cars. So just, you know, being young, trying to chase that dream and be like Trump, you know what I'm saying, and just have a positive role model to look up to. And even though at one time we didn't see eye to eye, I could bring you in. Amber Rose, she spoke yesterday. She's a model. She was big against Trump for years. I have a new video that just came out with her, a song called Trump, Trump Baby. She's on the song. It's number eight on Billboard right now. But the thing is, a lot of people don't realize, like, we need new voters, right? So when we, these people, like, you know, we're out here making all this content for Donald Trump and, you know, trying to sell Donald Trump on people, and they're not buying it. And then when they finally buy it 5 years later and we're like, boo, you can't do it, that hurts us. We need to get the new voters. We need new voters. We need to give people equal opportunity.
Soon after they spoke, rapper Forgetto Blow and Amber Rose took the stage of the RNC.
Yeah, it's the mayor, Magaville, baby.
Amber Rose.
Hey, you know who we voting for?
We voting Donald Trump, baby.
Donald Trump, baby.
America needs saving.
America needs saving.
We voting Trump, Trump, baby.
Trump, Trump, baby.
November 5th, we going crazy.
November 5th, we going crazy.
Red pill poppin', swerving in
the... That's rapper Forgetto Blow and Amber Rose, Trump, Trump, baby. Professor Clarence Lussain, your response to the appeal that President Trump is making right now and what rapper Forgetto Blow is saying.
So what we see with Forgetto Blow and Amber Rose, as well as the black Congress members, Republican Congress members that they're bringing on stage, is this effort to basically gaslight the black community on what really has been the Donald Trump record. And so what we see is this argument that the Democrats have for decades created the circumstances under which black people are living in the worst conditions possible, and that somehow Donald Trump will be able to overcome that, although there's literally no record of that. Tim Scott, for example, who's the senator from South Carolina, gave a speech on Monday where he argued that racism, America is not a racist country, that essentially racial discrimination, systemic and institutional, don't exist. In fact, Tim Scott should look at his own state, South Carolina. South Carolina is one of the poorest states in the country, as are many of the states that are controlled by the Republican Party. South Carolina, the governor is Republican. The two senators to the Congress are Republican. Six out of the seven House members are Republican, James Clyburn being the exception. the state legislature controlled by Republicans. And what we see is this is a state where poverty is high, it's above the national average. But then when you break it down, about 9 to 10% of whites in the state fall under that poverty line, but almost 25%, almost a quarter of black people. How do you explain that? Tim Scott explains it by saying that essentially it's those people's fault. It has nothing to do with the policies of the state. It has nothing to do with systemic racism. But we're talking generations of ways in which people, again, across these Republican states have been mired in poverty and, again, disproportionately racialized. And if you look at educational attainment, you look at access to health care, in all of these situations, racial disparities tend to manifest. But none of this is being addressed by the Tim Scotts, the Ben Carsons, the Amber Rose, and the other people of color that they're putting on stage at the Republican convention, because those are inconvenient truths.
Clarence Lucena, I want to thank you for being with us, political science professor at Howard University, director of the International Affairs Program there. His piece in The Nation will link to headline, "Don't Believe Trump When He Claims He's Not Racist." Coming up, a jury's convicted New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez. We'll get more. Covered by Thea Gilmore. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. I'm Amy Goodman. In New York, a federal jury Tuesday convicted New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez of corruption on all 16 counts he faced. He was found guilty of bribery in aiding Egypt and Qatar, as well as wire fraud, extortion, obstruction of justice, conspiracy, and acting as a foreign agent. This is U.S. Attorney Damian Williams.
This case has always been about shocking levels of corruption. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes in the form of cash, gold bars, a Mercedes-Benz. This wasn't politics as usual. This was politics for profit. And now that a jury has convicted Bob Menendez, his years of selling his office to the highest bidder have finally come to an end.
Bob Menendez faces up to 222 years in prison. Democrats are now calling on Senator Menendez to resign. Joining us here in Milwaukee at the Republican convention is Robert Henley, an award-winning investigative reporter who's been covering Menendez for decades, is here doing a two-hour nightly broadcast for the Pacifica Radio Network. Bob, you've been covering Menendez for years. He already was tried, and he was acquitted in that case years ago, but now we have this case.
Well, so what we see here is that this is really a condemnation of the political culture of New Jersey that's corrupt. And so this does leave an opening for the Republicans here, because it was facilitated. That's why Senator Menendez is holding on even now. Even though he has been convicted, he has no shame. You can't have shame and be in politics in New Jersey. And so this same lawlessness of Donald Trump is extended to Bob Menendez.
Explain what he was convicted of.
So it was an influence peddling thing where he ended up with gold bullion bars that were hard to explain, hundreds of thousands of dollars, a lovely new Mercedes-Benz for his significant other, and all kinds of business dealings with two local fixers, and then a global component where the U.S. government was concerned that he was actually giving information that was sensitive to Egyptian intelligence, just trying to promote business.
And talk about Egypt and Qatar were the two things he was doing in the halal
right,
business.
Right. And so what he was doing was clearing the field to make it possible for an American businessman to dominate it. So once again, with multinational rogue capitalism practice at the highest levels internationally, it hurts consumers and unsettles just working people. And he was really the beneficiary of it. It's a feudal system. It's a two-party bilking system. It's been going on for years, and it still continues.
So he was head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee when he was involved with these acts.
Well, and of course, we know his Cuban policy. So he has promoted this kind of terrorism that we look the other way on. So he has been someone, he came up, what's ironic is that he came up as a reformer. He came up as a young Turk that was going to change things. He actually put himself at risk to go against his mentor, the mayor of Union City, who ended up being convicted of corruption. So it is endemic. I think it has to do when capitalism controls politics. This is a logical consequence.
So what happens now? I mean, he was forced out of his Senate Foreign Relations Committee chair, but a number of Democrats led by Fetterman, Senator Fetterman from Pennsylvania, are calling on him to resign. If not, what happens?
He's impervious. So there could be a Senate sanction. He could get expelled. It's very unusual. There's only been seven sitting senators that have gone through this kind of situation. He's the first, and we are proud of him. He's the first sitting senator to be convicted as a foreign agent. I assume other people have done it, but he finally got caught, and that's an achievement.
And if, of course, he was forced out, then the Governor Murphy would choose.
Yes, we know that that's Governor Murphy had helped to have his wife run, and that little bit of feudalism and House of Lords thing collapsed in a very embarrassing way. I guess she's back to doing her charity work. And Andy Kim now, a young reformer, Democrat, people probably know him. He was one of the congressmen who actually took it upon himself to clean up the insurrection, a very compelling AP photo where we see him helping the folks clean up the Capitol. And so he seems to be positioned to win, but it is giving a little. I had a chance to run into Rudy Giuliani. And so, of course, he was talking about we've got to fight corruption at the highest level. Totally more magical thinking from those people.
I want to turn to another story that you've been reporting on. On Tuesday, police officers from Ohio shot dead 43-year-old Milwaukee resident Samuel Sharp, an unhoused black veteran here in Milwaukee. The officers who killed Samuel Sharp are in Wisconsin here, part of a 4,500 law enforcement officials group to come to the RNC. The shooting took place a mile from the RNC's proceedings. Sharp appeared to be in the middle of an altercation with another man when the police officers charged towards him before fatally shooting him. This is Alan Chavoya of the Milwaukee Alliance Against Racial and Political Oppression.
We spoke repeatedly with MPD and expressed the concerns of the people of Milwaukee as to what was going to happen with the thousands of police officers and law enforcement agents from around this country that were going to descend on Milwaukee. And they didn't give us a single answer. They told us to trust the process. Well, look at what the process got us. We warned the city. We warned Chief Norman. We warned the representatives, the chief of staff, Nick Desiato. We told them, you're going to bring a whole bunch of outside agitators to our city. Look what they're going to do. And they did it today. We're not even 2 days into this RNC, and we have a casualty. How is that possible?
So, Robert Henley, you're an award-winning investigative reporter. You're here to cover the RNC, but you end up covering this as well.
It's no surprise. When you militarize your politics, we see the results. Look what happened in the field in Butler, Pennsylvania, a $1 trillion national security apparatus that can protect the former president of the United States from his sole actor. Feel safe now?
So you have here the killing of a unhoused black vet.
Which follows on the killing of, by private security guards, of a black individual who walked into the wrong gender restroom.
That's right. That was Devante Mitchell, and we'll talk more about his case, killed not far from where we're broadcasting right now by security guards. Robert Henley, thanks so much for being with us, covering the RNC for Pacifica Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to two.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.